Good afternoon, Wrangell. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:03, and we have our guest Leslie Cummings in the studio today, and she's here to talk about how she came to be sober. So you can call in anytime during this program to ask a question or just say hi. That number is 874-2345. So Leslie, thank you for coming in today.
Well, thank you. Today. My name is Leslie, and I am a recovering alcoholic. I've been clean and sober for 21 years, actually 21 and a half this month. My sobriety date is 9/21/97. This is a sensitive topic. I'm a little bit nervous to be here. However, earlier this week, I saw Ben Affleck on the Today Show talking about the same subject, and he was promoting a movie, so I think I'll be okay.
I didn't know he struggled with that.
Yeah, for quite a few years in and out of treatment centers and stuff. So my motive today is only in an effort to help others. I wrote up a little thing here I'm reading. I'm not here to represent anyone or anything. I only want to share my experience. I cannot diagnose you or anyone with alcoholism or addiction. I do not wish to engage in any debates about the subject. As I share some of my personal information, please understand that this is not to toot my own horn or to gain personal recognition. It's just an effort to help others if they're struggling. Do you want me to keep going?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for coming in and talking about this. So,
sure.
Yeah, give us your reasoning.
It's a delicate subject, you know, and there's a lot of humiliation surrounded with it. I can't speak for anybody but myself. But my story is I got sober when I was 34. However, there was a 13-year period from 1984 to 1997 when I was not truly convinced that I was a real alcoholic. So I continued to research the subject. In other words, trying this, that, and the other. All evidence supported the fact that I had a problem. I was in denial. It was circumstances, and mostly I had bad luck, especially with the police. I tried AA. I tried a myriad of solutions. I switched addictions. I moved around a lot, in and out of meaningless relationships, trying different jobs, only drinking beer, only smoking pot. I tried rehab. I tried church, going to a counselor, dieting, exercising, dipping my toes in different bodies of water, burning sage. I can add to the list ad infinitum. I could stop anytime I wanted to, June, and I did stop many times. I just could not stay stopped. It was exhausting and frustrating because I never gave sobriety a chance. I wanted instant gratification. One time, I did not have a drink for 365 days in a row, but I smoked pot every day. I ended up drinking again, and that is just my story. I didn't try sobriety for another 3 years. I functioned just fine. Nobody paid my way. I would smirk. It got a little worse each relapse. Worse as I mean that as in I felt defeated, hopeless, baffled. I was full of shame and guilt. I just did not understand what was wrong with me. I would like to say, no, it wasn't alcoholism. I was young. I was having fun. That's what we all did in the 80s. I wasn't that bad. I could readily find someone worse than me. I was never homeless or unemployable or dumpster diving. I never got DTs or the shakes. That thinking is called rationalization and justification. I used to believe that saying you have a drinking problem means you are a loser. Where is your willpower? It's an inanimate object. Don't put it in your pie hole. Well, it's a clinical fact that the denial factor in addiction is incredible. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. If someone, anyone, tried to tell me I had a drinking problem, I would get angry and or indignant. I once had a bar boss tell me, "You can work here, Leslie, but you can't drink here." That infuriated me. I said, "Take that job and," well, you know the rest. She had no idea the stress I was under. If you had my problems, you would drink too. I seriously did not think I had a problem. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. There's a joke about how many substance abuse counselors does it take to change a light bulb? Well, it only takes one counselor, but the light bulb has to really want to change.
Absolutely.
The honest to goodness truth is I was, I am, and I always will be an alcoholic, and that is okay with me today. I used to hate myself. I was full of self-pity, and I didn't feel good about the way I treated my family or my loved ones. I always had some darn excuse. I was unpredictable, unreliable, and undependable. I moved around a lot. I ended up in Kodiak commercial fishing and bartending in the off season. That was wild. I had no accountability, just party on, Garth, and I was making a ton of money. I tried college in Idaho, but then I ended up majoring in Tavern Lifestyle 101. I quit school. I was running with a pretty rough crowd. I was bartending, going to concerts, hanging with bikers, and just drinking, drinking, drinking. It was pretty fun for a while until it wasn't. So then what happened? Well, one day, September 20th, 1997, I was drinking in a cute little bar outside Denver, Colorado. My Packers were kicking butt with old number 4 Brett Favre, my hero. I should have been happy, but I wasn't. Anyone who knows me knows about my Green Bay Packer addiction. Anyway, I was not down and out in any way. I had a boyfriend, a job, a roof over my head, weed, money in my pocket, and all that. But I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was estranged from my friends and my family. They were sick and tired, too. It was just not fun anymore. I kept looking at the glass of Captain and Seven in front of me, feeling dejected. Should I have another drink? Should I not have another drink? Should I kill myself? Should I run away? What should I do? I was trying to figure it out. Nothing seemed right. As I say this today, I remember that feeling so well. It sucked big time. It was my bottom, I guess. Nothing bad happened that night. No fights, jails, drama. I think I was just done. I wish I could explain it, but I can't. I think it might be called grace, but I'm not sure. I called a friend in Oregon. She said, go back to AA. I said, that doesn't work for me. I've been there, done that. She said, this time join the group, Leslie, instead of eavesdropping in meetings. Whatever that meant. This woman was a friend I used to drink and drug with in Kodiak, and she had 4 years clean, and her life was amazing, and I wanted me some of that nonsense, so I went back to AA, and I listened more intently, and I made a decision.
Can I get into
this? Absolutely.
You said her life was amazing, and your life wasn't.
Correct.
Why? What did hers look like, and yours didn't?
Well, her life, she had been right with me all along, and then she had some kids, and so she slowed down, and then she decided she was an alcoholic, and she started going to AA, and her and I kept in touch for the whole 4 years that she was sober, and I kept noticing all these. It was basically about the way she felt about life, I think. It was no longer doom and gloom and poor me, and they did that to me, and there's a lot, for me, there was a lot of blaming and shaming. It was their fault. It was this fault. It was the Rock's fault. It was everybody's fault but my own.
And so, yeah, so even while, you know, you had a boyfriend, you had the, you know, the cash, you had, you know, fun. You had this fun lifestyle, it sounds like. There was a sense of shame that came from making mistakes. I mean, what did that look like?
Well, for me, you know, alcoholism ran in my family, but I didn't think I had it. You know, I had an idea of what alcoholism looked like. And like I said, I wasn't unemployed. I wasn't homeless. And I was smart and I was young, you know, and not that bad looking. And I just, you know, I had a lot of fun, but alcohol turned on me. It was like it was really a lot of fun for a very long time, but then it just didn't fill up the hole. You know, and alcohol, it wasn't the problem. It was the solution.
So this hole, I mean, what is the hole? I mean, you've mentioned it's shame.
Well, and it's, I think it's confusion. It's not knowing, you know, it's like, I don't feel quite right. You know, like I'd go to the bars and I'd participate in the parties and the dances. And I was always the life of the party. And I had, but at some point, it was like it wasn't fun anymore. I can't really explain it except for I knew that drinking wasn't helping my situation. Drinking was not helping my situation.
And your situation being your life or your situation being?
Mainly my thinking.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. You're thinking.
People are talking about me. People don't like me. Mm. Those mean girls. That boy won't talk. Whatever it was, whatever the sensitivity or the fear that came across, if I took a drink, then I didn't feel it. I didn't care what you thought. I didn't care what he thought. I didn't care about what anybody thought. And that constant squirrel cage in my head stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, then after I started realizing that I might have a drinking problem here because I couldn't seem to stop for very long, I started doing research. You know, I'm a journalism major. And I was like, and they have assessment tests, you know, and there's all kinds of ways. But I still denied it. Because of the way my life looked, I didn't think I was really an alcoholic. I thought I was a victim of circumstance.
I mean, would you say that, you know, you were depressed at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That there was a lot of mental...
I think depression goes hand in hand with alcoholism.
Yes.
I'm sober today, but that doesn't mean I still don't struggle with depression. I just have different ways to cope with it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Healthier ways.
Yeah. Okay.
You want me to finish this?
Yeah.
So the end of this is just that the key to sobriety is willingness. You know, it's nobody's fault. There are many ways to get and stay sober, but this is just what worked for me. And it has been up and down and all around. All the worst things that have happened to me in my life have happened to me in sobriety. But I just don't go throw gas on the fire. I said, it has been up and down and all around and joyous. I finally belong in my own skin. I just don't drink today, Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. It is truly one day at a time. And I know that sounds really cliche. Mm-hmm. However, that's what works. I didn't drink yesterday, and I'm not likely to drink today. And I cannot speak to tomorrow or next week. I just have today. And I keep it as simple as possible. I try not to get caught up with my mistakes in the past or my future fears. Doesn't mean I still don't suffer pain, disappointment, depression, or make mistakes. Of course I do. I just don't throw gas on the fire. So I wanted to say for anyone listening that wants to stop or has a loved one that they want to help stop, all I can say is that there is a solution. It's not easy, but it is very simple. Anyone can get sober, and I mean anyone. Doesn't matter race, creed, religion. Alcoholism is the great equalizer. You know, but they have to want it. And there is help out there. There's great literature. There's a lot of support and a lot of love. We stick together in AA. We don't shoot our wounded. We have meetings Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. It's listed in the newspaper and on the bulletin boards. We have schedules and give out our phone numbers. Your hope, June, is that anyone listening today will be slower to judge and more eager to help that alcoholic or addict in his or her own life. We're just trying to find a better way, less destructive way to live.
Absolutely. Leslie, thank you so much. And we will go to a short break and we will be right back.
Thanks.
All right, you are tuning in to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:19. We have Leslie Cummings in the studio to talk about sobriety. Apparently, March is Sobriety Awareness Month in the state of Alaska. They just decided that last year, so that's a new thing. And Leslie would love to take some of your calls if you have questions or comments. That number is 874-2345. And, you know, Leslie, you mentioned that AA has been a big support for you. Tell me how this works.
Okay, well, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, so it's an anonymous program. And it was created by two co-founders back in the 30s. And these two guys were both helpless, hopeless alcoholics. And they ended up connecting. And in my view, that's how it works, is we help each other, we support each other. There is 12 steps outlined. They're difficult steps, but they're like there's an inventory process. You get to the root of the trouble. You define trouble areas, and then you develop these relationships. What's happened to me is I've developed relationships, and I thought that getting sober meant that I was never going to have fun anymore. You know, people in AA were dumb and boring, and sitting around in a group talking about your problems was pathetic. But what I found for me is exactly the opposite. It takes more courage to admit when I've been wrong. You know, if there wasn't anything in AA, do you think after 21 years I'd still go? Absolutely not. But I get a lot out of it. I get a lot of personal gratification. And, you know, getting the plug in the jug is one thing, but then going to those deeper sensitive areas and then watching someone you care about change their life right in front of your very eyes and to be a part of that is just, I can't even describe how incredible it is.
Yeah, you said those deeper areas. I mean, what... You know, it's not just about putting, the plug in the jug, like you said. What are those deeper areas? What do you think people are struggling with that happen to be alcoholics?
Well, you know, honestly, I can't speak to anybody else. But what I can say is, you know, our literature describes it pretty good. And for me, I just have what I term hypersensitivity. Is I'm very sensitive, and I have to constantly work on not taking things personal. And, you know, that wasn't about me. And maybe that person is just having a bad day, or, you know, maybe I did say something inappropriate, and cleaning up my mess, going to the person and saying, you know what, I didn't mean it like that. Or I hope you didn't, whatever it is, it's about just being adult. You know, adulting. That's what my niece always calls it. She goes, we're adulting. Yeah. And, you know, I just try to do the best I can. And sometimes the best I can is just don't take a drink today.
Yes. And I loved what you were saying about it being day to day. And that sounds cliche, but when we were talking earlier, you know, you said something like, I just tell myself, if I want to drink in the next hour, I will. And I was like, Leslie, what? How? Mm-hmm. Explain to me.
Well,
what do
because,
you mean by that?
Yeah. You know, and there's all kinds of information, you know, psychological information and stuff. But a craving comes into my, like, oh, that person hurt my feelings. And so I'm going to go have a drink. Or I had such a good day and I got some extra money. I'm just going to go have a drink. If you wait it through... You know, before, when I was struggling for the 13 years, I would just act on that impulse. Now I just kind of think it through and I go, okay, well, you know, it's 1 o'clock. If I still feel like drinking at 2 o'clock, then I'll take a drink. I do the same thing with pot. It's like, I haven't told myself I'll never smoke pot again. I have a fantasy with it. It's legal now. It wasn't legal when I was, you know, and it wasn't that good either. It was, you know, so I say, I'm just not going to today. And then if and when that day comes, I'll deal with it then. And I don't get what we call future tripping. You know, I don't get too far out there. I just try to keep it simple. Don't drink today. Don't use today. Find another way. And
yeah.
And because of this lifestyle, it has afforded me so many other opportunities that I never imagined. You know, I just wanted a driver's license. I wanted everybody off my back. And I wanted to be able to drink with nobody bothering me and find it like a secret handshake where you can drink and not have any consequences. And man, I've got so much more out of my life. I have so much more depth than I ever had before. It was just shallow living.
Shallow.
That's the way I see it. Waiting. You know, now I'm in the deep water. I'm jumping off the deep end now.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Okay. Then, Leslie, let's go to a very short break. We'll see if anybody wants to call in, and then we can finish up our conversation. All right, the time is 1:27. We have Leslie Cummings with us. We're talking about sobriety, and we would love to take one of your calls. That number is 874-2345. And Leslie, yeah, we've just been talking about really about how important it is to be honest with yourself to make this happen. And one of my questions, was how do you know if you have a problem? How can people be honest with themselves?
Well, and that's a very good question. And that takes many forms. You know, right on our chips, it says to thine own self be true. And I know for me that I could say I was an alcoholic. They say that's the first step in recovery. And I'd scream it from the nearest bar stool, I'm an alcoholic. However, once I admitted that I had a drinking problem to my innermost self, I really accepted that I was an alcoholic. It was like things were always different. Yes, I could drink, but I never had fun anymore. It was like there was this deep shame that I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be doing this. And I didn't know the word justify, justifying, but I that's what I was doing. I was like blaming everybody. And that's really about bondage. And for me to not pick up that drink, to not pick up that doobie, to not pick up whatever that is, I feel freer than I've ever felt in my life. I have no crutch. I don't smoke anymore. I don't chew Nicorette gum. You know, I still have some issues that we won't get into. You know, mostly it's food is my, comfort thing. But, I can't just quit cold turkey like I did everything else. So, whatever that feeling is that's driving the compulsion or the obsession, that's what you get to the core of.
I see what you're saying. So when you notice that you're like, oh, I need to have a drink. Oh, I need to have a cigarette.
I need to go for a run. Some people get really into exercise. I mean, there's all kinds of different manifestations of anxiety, especially in our society today. You know, we're a world of bells and whistles and beeps and our brains are overstimulated. So in order to relax, it's like have that glass of wine or whatever. And for me, I could do that. I could have one glass of wine and be fine. I could have one beer and be fine. But eventually would come the time when I wasn't fine. And now I find out that empty hole gets filled in with other things, my grandkids, bowling with my mother, going fishing with my husband and not being drunk, watching that football game from beginning to end and not blacking out at halftime.
It's like this thing that you might be thinking is a form of your self-care. It could be a form of it's just medication. It's a
coping skill. And see, that's where the 12 steps come in. They have taught me how to cope with things. As simple as a serenity prayer. Is this my problem? Do I have to change this, or can I accept this how it is? If I can't accept it how it is, then I have to make the change. Mm-hmm. And change is one of those things that is inevitable. Everything always changes, whether we want it to or not. The seasons change, our age, our kids grow up and leave home, or whatever it is, we cannot change the fact that everything's going to change. And so the struggle for me is I'm going to go with the flow on this, or am I going to buck the tide? And I'm a tide bucker, and I want to fight my way through it, and I want to argue about it. And that gets me stirred up. And then a drink would calm me down. And now sitting quietly, meditating, calling a friend, going to a meeting, praying, whatever I have to do, I still light the sage and whatever, but I think part of it is maturity too, just growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, Leslie, thank you for taking the time to come in today. It's a pretty intimate personal story. There's a lot of vulnerability involved.
Absolutely.
And these are the stories that I'm most grateful to hear, really.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess I'll finish up by saying that there's more than one way, But together is a good way, because you're not only helping yourself, but you're helping that person that, you know, it helps me to help others. And if nobody comes and asks for help, you're kind of alone, you know. And so, you know, there's counselors out there that have a plethora of information. We have a good support community, you know, and I worry about the young kids and the pharmaceutical industry and just all the stuff that's going on out there. You know, there is a solution, and that is my theme, that there's other ways than ingesting.
Absolutely. So we will be signing off, but real quick, if somebody wants to go to some AA meetings, what should they do? How can they find out about
that?
Well,
it's really easy to find us. Uh-huh. You just look in the paper. Mm-hmm. All the meetings are at the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. There's schedules on the bulletin boards downtown. You know, a few of us, you know who we are. Just ask us. We'll pick you up, take you to the meeting, take you home. The police station knows. The counselors, AICS knows our schedule. We try to work with each other as best as we can. And, you know, they can call me if they want. Just remember that, you know, use appropriate hours would be nice.
Understood. Okay. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, June. Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to Talk on the Rock, and as usual, we will be back next Tuesday at 1 o'clock with another guest. Bye.